How powerful was Ancalagon the Black, the mightiest winged fire dragon ever? Was he just a big dragon, or was there more going on? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, The Witcher, and other great fantasy books and TV shows in nerdy detail. Welcome. In a previous video, we looked at Glaurung the Golden, the first and mightiest of the dragons devised by Morgoth. But although he was definitely a dragon, Tolkien used the word Uruloki to describe him, which means fire drake, the same word he used for Smaug. Glaurung was missing one vital part of what we think of as what makes up a dragon. He didn't have wings. He was, to all intents and purposes, a prototype. He had astonishing powers, but Morgoth clearly thought he could do better, so he went back to the drawing board. As always, we should clarify that Morgoth here was not creating something out of nothing. Only Uru, the one true god of Tolkien's legendarium, could do that. He had to use existing materials and corrupt them or twist them in some way. That said, whatever he made Glaurung out of, it seems that the dragons that followed, his descendants, including Ancalagon, were more a matter of selective breeding. Glaurung was known as the father of dragons, so like orcs, who according to Tolkien multiply after the manner of the children of Ilúvatar, we could theoretically trace the draconic line back through the ages to Glaurung. So yes, orc babies and yes, dragon babies. Glaurung's DNA was probably therefore mixed with something else and more than a pinch of dark magic to bring the wings. Think when Saruman and probably earlier Sauron seemingly mixed a little human DNA into their orcs to create Uruk-hai, orcs who, among other things, could operate in daylight. Without going through the entire history of the First Age, Glaurung first emerged in the year 260 and died in the year 499 when Morgoth's forces were slowly pressing their way across the continent, defeating foes everywhere. One elven or human stronghold fell after another. Glaurung fell, but he had been extraordinarily effective. This was an experiment worth repeating, and it appears that behind the scenes Morgoth had been doing just that. Not that we saw the result until the year 587 of the First Age, so nearly a century after Glaurung's demise. By then, things had changed dramatically in Middle-earth. Morgoth's seemingly inevitable conquest of the continent had been foiled. Eärendil's epic mission to seek out the aid of the Valar had resulted in the host of the Valar arriving in Middle-earth and driving Morgoth's forces all the way back to the gates of Angband, Morgoth's fortress. Things looked desperate for him. We read this in the Silmarillion. Then, seeing that his hosts were overthrown and his power dispersed, Morgoth quailed, and he dared not come forth himself. But he loosed upon his foes the last desperate assault that he had prepared, and out of the pits of Angband there issued the winged dragons that had not before been seen, and so sudden and ruinous was the onset of that dreadful fleet that the host of the Valar was driven back. For the coming of the dragons was with great thunder and lightning and a tempest of fire. We're talking about Ancalagon here, the greatest of that dreadful fleet, but it's clear that Morgoth released a lot of dragons at that time. Glaurung's impact was alone, albeit against weaker opposition than the host of the Valar, and without the support of great thunder and lightning and so on, whereas Ancalagon was one of many who had been unleashed at the same time to ruinous effect. Still, their impact was immense. The host of the Valar were pushed back until this happened. Eärendil came, shining with white flame, and about Vingolot were gathered all the great birds of heaven, and Throndor was their captain, and there was battle in the air all the day and through a dark night of doubt. Before the rising of the sun, Eärendil slew Ancalagon the Black, the mightiest of the dragon host, and cast him from the sky. And he fell upon the towers of Thangorodrim, and they were broken in his ruin. Then the sun rose, and the host of the Valar prevailed, and wellnigh all the dragons were destroyed, and all the pits of Morgoth were broken and unroofed. We'll get back to what happened to the other dragons at another time, but Ancalagon was thrown down by an elf, so perhaps not that impressive. But we obviously need to think again, because Eärendil wasn't just an elf, but a legend in his own right. And he wasn't just standing around on the ground trying to get a lucky shot in on the dragon. He was in a flying ship with a Silmaril, and, well, this is the description. Fair and marvellous was that vessel made, and it was filled with a wavering flame, pure and bright, and Eärendil the mariner sat at the helm, glistening with dust of elven gems, and the Silmaril was bound upon his brow. Far he journeyed in that ship, even into the starless voids, but most often was he seen at morning or at evening, glimmering in sunrise or sunset, as he came back to Valinor from voyages beyond the confines of the world. Impressive stuff. He was literally a star come to Earth. So instead of judging Ancalagon by who he was defeated by, let's first acknowledge that it was a close-run thing. There was a dark night of doubt for the forces of good, with an impressive foe. Then also that he was recognised as the mightiest of all the dragons in that host. And finally, his size, which is massive. Tolkien didn't tell us exactly how big Ancalagon was, and to be honest, he didn't tell us much about him full stop. We just read the only named reference to him in the Silmarillion, and he has just one other reference in The Lord of the Rings, which we'll get onto. But we do get a clue. When he was killed, he fell upon the towers of Thangorodrim, and they were broken in his ruin. We don't know how high he was falling from, or anything like that, so the idea of breaking some stonework doesn't tell us much, but we do know a bit about Thangorodrim. Tolkien tells us that its towers were the mightiest in Middle-earth and could be beheld from far off. They were basically volcanoes into which Morgoth had burrowed his fortress, and we have, remarkably, a picture from Tolkien himself of Tol Sirion, which has them in the distance. He seems to have changed his mind on their position somewhat later, but if you take that at face value, as Karen Wynn Fonstad, the highly respected Tolkien scholar and cartographer, did, you get the height of the tallest at about 35,000 feet, that's over 10 kilometres, with the base being 5 miles, about 8 kilometres wide. There were three of those towers, and Ancalagon's fall destroyed all of them. Are we really to believe that Ancalagon's wingspan was several miles wide? Personally, I don't think so. Perhaps Ancalagon's fall wiped out one of them, and that knocked over the other two. They were mighty, but they were also glorified volcanic slag heaps, so one falling could easily have set off a volcanic landslide eruption that took out the other two. But still, large enough to destroy a mountain? That's impressively large. I'll spare you the nerdy calculations, but Smaug was something over 20 metres long, Glaurung perhaps twice that, and Ancalagon clearly larger still. And he had wings, of course. Thorondor, the King of Eagles, who was also in that battle, had a wingspan of 55 metres, that's 180 feet. And it's not hard to imagine the biggest ever dragon being larger than the biggest ever eagle. This was an age of legends, remember. A literal star also fought in the battle. So Tolkien leaves it to our imagination, but there is little doubt that Ancalagon was enormous. And given that his predecessor Glaurung and descendant Smaug both had the usual array of dragony strengths, immensely strong scale armour, intelligence, a certain hypnotic charm, and fire breathing, of course, he probably had them too. Actually, the fire breathing is the thing that is also referenced in The Lord of the Rings. Gandalf says this to Frodo. It has been said that dragonfire could melt and consume the rings of power, but there is not now any dragon left on earth in which the old fire is hot enough, nor was there ever any dragon, not even Ancalagon the Black, who could have harmed the One Ring, the ruling ring, for that was made by Sauron himself. Not being able to breathe fire hot enough to destroy the One Ring is not a big indicator of weakness, but the fact that Gandalf chose Ancalagon as the example of the hottest dragonfire ever, not even Ancalagon the Black, he says, shows that Ancalagon, by reputation at least, breathed the fiercest flame, hotter even than Glaurung. It is noticeable also that Gandalf doesn't feel the need to explain to Frodo who Ancalagon was, which means that Ancalagon's legend had been passed down the millennia not just to the likes of Gandalf, who had lost most of his memories of life before his Third Age arrival in Middle-earth, but also to Frodo and the Hobbits. It's tempting to underrate the importance or power of Ancalagon, because he is only mentioned twice in the main books of the published Legendarium, once in the Silmarillion and once in the Lord of the Rings, and both of those occasions could be interpreted as underwhelming. In the Silmarillion, he is named and vanquished in the same sentence, and in the Lord of the Rings, he is referenced only in the context of something he couldn't do, destroy the One Ring. But when you look at it the other way, he is only vanquished in a hard-fought battle against a bona fide legend with his Silmaril and hallowed flying ship, and it is made clear that Ancalagon is the greatest of the flying dragons ever. And when Gandalf says that he wouldn't have been able to destroy the One Ring, it's because it was a reasonable question to ask. Could the most powerful of flying dragons have been able to do it? It wasn't an obvious point. And his legend had survived for thousands of years. And Ancalagon the Black was the mightiest of the flying dragons, and one of the mightiest creatures ever in Middle-earth. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.